Session number 10413, reel 18.
Mr. George South, Reel 18. What happened after this patrol and the bombardment which to clear the trenches?
Well, we were pulled out for a day's rest. I think it was the 6th Battalion came and took over our positions. And we came back, not very far back. And then we went into Elst, and there we got word that you could go back to Nijmegen. A company on a Monday, B company Tuesday, C company on Wednesday, D company on Thursday, for a bath, set of clean clothes, and look around the town in a pot of tea here and a glass of wine there, and come back. And then we were pulled out of Elst into Nijmegen itself for 4 days, and then back up to Elst. And then we heard rumours again we were being pulled out the line altogether. And lo and behold, a few days later, we got on wagons and we came back to a village just outside Yipes, or Wipers, as some people call it. And there we started disbanding the 8th Battalion. And those that had served a certain period of time in the 8th Battalion were staying, but those that had only served a short time were being transferred to other regiments.
How did you feel about that? And how did they explain it to you?
Well, what they said was that 50 Div was war weary. They had gone from the BEF days through the desert, war weary, and that it was running short of reinforcements, and the only thing they could do was break up the 50th Div, which was the oldest Div, reinforce the other divs and send us home war weary. And we would be given a specific job back in England.
Did you agree that you were war weary?
Oh, yes. We're tired of the book. I would have liked, I think everybody would have liked to have gone into Germany for the satisfaction of 6 years hard labour and then being taken out at the last minute.
Was there a pleased mood what was uppermost in your mind when you heard? Were you pleased or were you more worried about not being there at the end?
Well, I was pleased because the simple reason I was pleased, I'd just got married. In the November of 43, and you know, it was just 44, and leave was very far between, and so I would probably be looking at getting back to the girlfriend more than anything else. And eventually we came back to Caithley.
I'll just ask a few questions about the whole campaign, you know, 44 into 45. Now, when you were talking about the 40 campaign, and I asked you about the officers and the NCOs, you said that some of them didn't do too well, but they were all right. That, you know, you didn't seem... But you seem to have been much more critical of the officers you had in 44, and, you know, and I wonder whether that is... Whether that's just an, whether that's an accurate impression, whether they did do worse.
Well, I can only speak as an individual. I can only speak of what I found of officers that came to me. I'm not saying this was a general. I'm just saying that the officers that came to me. There was a lot of officers throughout the war. Some were better than others. Some were worse than others. I have an officer who lives three doors off me now, who was a captain in the Durham Light Infantry. And he came to the 8th Battalion when we came back from Dunkirk, when Lieutenant Colonel Beard was in charge of there. And he didn't last 3 weeks. I mean, that was just an example. And as I say, I might be critical of officers. I was critical of this lad that had shot a German and then collapsed, you know. But I got to know him. And he got a little bit of experience. And this is where they fell down, I think. I mean, the first time I went in action with this major... I went to search a house, and when I came outside, the major and the private's fighting. I was a Jerry Watch. You know, you wouldn't. I mean, I kept my mouth shut. I kicked this private's ass out of it, and I kept my mouth shut about it. But if I'd said the CO is a bloody major fighting with private, you know. And this was typical of him. But this man... Why I criticised him so much for was that he had been teaching officers in Octu at Sandhurst. It's like West Point, isn't it? And coming out here, and he hadn't a clue, because I think what he was teaching them in Sandhurst was the old war, First World War method. And there was officers that he liked. But there was also officers that didn't like it. If you remember at the beginning of this, when I said the 8th Battalion was a family. And everybody treated each other as a brother. Even officers. You know, when you went on parade, they would call you George or whatever they called you. But you always got the officer that came and, you know, stand to attention when you talk to me and all this, the 8th Battalion didn't like that.
What about the colonel? You seem to be slightly ambivalent about him. You told one or two stories.
He's the only colonel that I never couldn't get on with. Lidwell was a good colonel. McLaren was a good colonel. Tim Beard, an old regular, he was a good colonel. Lidwell, I didn't have a lot to do with him because I didn't meet him till I rejoined the 8th Battalion, and then in the invasion he got the knock. There was another one. I got on all right with him, but I couldn't. I didn't know. Bristles used to go rise on the back of my neck when.
Do you think he was actually a bad colonel, or was it just you didn't get on with him?
Well, to me, I couldn't get on with him. maybe my fault, or maybe his. But, as I say, I respected him till this Albert Canal deal, when he was at this side and we were at the other side. And it took him 3 days before he came over. And, I mean, Lidwell or any of the other, they would have been over same time as me.
What about the NCOs?
Again, you got good NCOs, you got bad NCOs, you got NCOs that, what we used to say, was hiding behind the stripes.
What about all these people you mentioned who disappeared? Was it ever sorted out what happened to them? For instance, the captain who disappeared. No, you found him dead, I think.
The padre, who used to look after the dead, was a long time before he found Rydolch. And they found the remains of Captain Rydolch up a tree where the 88, it must have been a direct hit and, you know, blown him to bits.
What about the CSM?
Now, the San Media, nobody got to know where he was till after the battalion had disbanded and been returned to England. And I met him in a club. And I said, the search parties were still looking for him. And he disappeared again.
But he just left.
And I never saw him, never saw him anymore.
So, besides disappearances from war, you know, where people were killed or went missing properly, there were some people, in your view, who just generally ducked out, scarpered.
Oh, yes. Many times you knew you were going into attack and you told everybody to be ready for such and such a period, and you'd go to round them up and there would just be the weapons and their equipment lying and no bodies. They'd gone. This day, I'm telling you, when this gun was firing short, I had a lad from Ashington. Great lad. There's two of them together, two mates. You couldn't part them. And he was crying for his mother when this was dropping in this trench we were in. And the only way you could go back is if you had a chit signed. And I signed him a chit to go back to the MO.
Why did you do that?
Oh, why? You kind of cope with people like that. You know, he broke down, nervous, crying his eyes out, crying for his mother. You haven't got time to look after them people. You've got to look after the rest of them that's moving.
Are there many cases like that amongst the other ranks?
Not a great lot, but you did get the odd one now and again.
Was it an accumulative pressure, or would there be people who just couldn't cope with it in the first place?
Well, I've met them that couldn't cope with it in the first place. But others, it took a while, and it just, you know, you're not yourself when you go in these. Your nerves is, you know, pulled tight.
How about yourself? How were you feeling? You'd had a fair amount of action.
There's only once that I could have given in and said, enough's enough, get me back. And we were in a rest period at the time. And we had we'd formed a sniper section. And this sniper asked me if I could show him how he could get out into no man's land. And I showed him, and I took him up, he was on about, he had 52 notches and all this crap, you know. And I came back and I sat, and all of a sudden, it just felt as though all the energy drained away, and sick as a pig. And I thought, yeah, but time we were getting out of this. And
when was that? It was a rest period, you said. Was that late on?
Oh, aye, yes, it was after Gale, we were in this rest period.
When did you hear about your DCM?
Well,
that was for what you'd done at
Gale. When we went into this attack, when we were in Elst, we were moved out of Elst into this row of houses in this little village and billeted in the houses. And this IOR officer had a fire. And I never used to eat breakfast. I just used like a cup of pot of tea. But about 10 o'clock, I was famished. And I walked in this room which this officer was sleeping in, because he was the only one that had a fire. And I said, I'm going to make some toast. And I was on toast in the bread. And I forget his first name now. He used to call me Geordie, and I used to call him. Never mind, I can't think what it was. And the door opened, and I said, is that you, John? Or whatever your name was. And it was the CO. And he said to me, what the hell do you think you're doing? And I said, I'm toasting bread. And I said to him, I never eat breakfast. And so I have a slice of toast about 10 o'clock in the morning. And he keeps me going. So I said, well, I've got a present for you. So I said, oh, what's that? There's a piece of metal ribbon from the divisional commander for the award of the DCM. Thank you very much, sir. And don't let me catch you in here toasting bread again. This is officer's quarters. Out! And not long after that...
Did you know why you'd got it? I mean, because sometimes people don't know why they got it.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know who'd recommended me. And this is the funny part about it. He was the man that had recommended me.
The colonel?
I didn't know for long enough. But before we came back to Ypres... we were sent on leave, 4 days leave in Brussels. And I came back off 4 days leave in Brussels and told to report to Ypres. I was going to be receive my medal ribbon of Montgomery. And so those 3 or 4 of us went down to Ypres and were in the picture house in Ypres, or a theatre, I didn't know which it was, but it had a stage, and he was standing in the middle of the stage, and I walked on. And when I walked on, he said, long time since I saw you. Be Sicily, wasn't it? So I said, that's right, sir. And I was giving you your breakfast. He said, yes, we've come a long way since then. I said, yes. And we went outside and we all had our photos taken with Montgomery. And just after that, we came back again, but a bit further down the road, where we disbanded and we came back to Keithley.
The other thing... What about the actual nature of the weaponry being used? Now, in the first in the 40 campaign, you were very unhappy with the quality of everything.
Well, everything.
How would it, now, it was a very different situation, wasn't it?
Up to a point, we had good tanks. But if they ever came up against a Tiger tank, they were no good. I mean, even the Shermans had 17-pounders on them. But a tiger tank, and they were capable of knocking a tiger out, but it took a lot of doing. But a tiger firing into the chairman, one shot, and that was it. The 88 artillery, all-purpose gun, artillery, anti-tank, aircraft, anything. We haven't got a gun to this day to touch that 88. It was the finest gun there ever was. And anybody that was in the forces during the war will tell you that.
What's so good about it to you, besides its versatility?
Well, it could do anything. Anything they wanted, it could do. Could knock tanks out, shoot planes down, and knock the infantry out. And it, the velocity of that gun must have been terrific, because you used to hear the explosion before you heard the bang of the gun. You know, it used to be bang, 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 bang. Where I was, you used to hear it, shh, shh, bang. But, everybody used to try to catch the sights off a 88 or a breech. Boy, I never get one.
You used to try and do what, sorry?
Get the sights off an 88 or the breech.
Why?
Jerry used to take it with him if he was going to lose the gun. He used to take it with him up the road. He never got the breech. I mean, we used to use a lot of his weapons against him. Although we were warned not to. But a Smyzer was always better than a Sten.
Why was it better?
Well, it was a better weapon altogether, more efficient. And it fired the same ammunition. It was a faster rate of fire. And you could rely on it where you couldn't rely on Sten guns. As I've told you, they used to jam when you needed them. Or fire when you didn't bloody need them.
They'd stop firing when you banged the butt, though, hadn't they, by now?
Oh, yes, by now they had. And all NCOs had these silenced Sten guns. But a Smyzer, it was more efficient weapon altogether. And you were over the moon if you got one of them. It was like a Luger. We had nothing to touch the Luger. As a weapon, although we did get a lot of things.
What weapons did you carry? Because you told me before the interview.
I used to carry as many as I could. I used to have a 45 on my hip.
What? The revolver?
A revolver. A Luger in me waistband. Sten gun. About half a dozen hand grenades, two Mills bomb, two 36s, two phosphorus, two flash.
And what were the grenades like compared to the Germans? Were they good grenades?
Oh yes, that was the one thing. I would say our grenades, our 36 Mills grenade, was better than a Tatey Masher.
Were you not a bit nervous of grenades after the accident?
No. No.
Why was it better? Sorry, Ashton.
Well, it did more damage. It spread out more. Broke into more pieces than what a Tatey Masher did. They were awful things, Tatey Mashers, but compared to the 36 mils grenade, they weren't on.
What about the phosphorus and flash? Are they the Bakelite ones?
They're the Bakelite ones.
What about those grenades? What were they good and what were they used for?
Well, the flash used to make a very brilliant light, and if somebody throws a brilliant light, you can't see for a while, and you had time to shoot him before he got his eyesight back. And the phosphorus used to set fire to things. You know, it used to burst and fly all over.
Was that mainly for street fighting?
Hmm?
Was that mainly for street fighting? Or?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Did you use many of them?
I never used a lot of them. I would throw a 36 in before I would...
What, as a precaution?
Mm-hmm.
Any other weapons that on either side that you could compare? Was the Piat any use against these?
The Piat? The Piat, you wanted a tank in the right place, otherwise.
It bounced off.
But if you hit it right, it would penetrate.
Even the Tiger?
Oh, yes, it would penetrate if you hit it in the right place. You should just make a hole. Well, I think it's my thumb. But the blast used to go inside and damage.
What about sticky bombs? Did you ever try and use them? Or?
No, I never used them, although I've seen them. I've learned what to do with them. I have never had...
They weren't used in fighting as far as you were concerned?
I never had one. Some people had them. We didn't have many of them. You're lucky if you're alive near enough to stick a one on the side of a tank. Unless you're behind it, where nobody can see you.
What about mines? You told me it's about an S mine. Can you tell me about that?
Well, it was a canister mine. It was about the width of that.
About 3 inches across.
And it was about that big.
6 inches long.
And it was full. At first, it used to have a bullet in. And then they filled it with ball bearings. And they used to put it in the ground. And it had three prongs sticking out. And when you put your foot on it, you pressed the detonator down. And it used to explode and fly out. How far is off? And then they put nails in anything in towards the end of the war. But as I say, you had to be very careful. They had anti-personnel mines, little mines, you know. But the S mines, if you were advancing, you were looking for the enemy. You weren't looking for half crowns on the bottom. And a lot of people were killed with them.
Did they explode as you stood on them or as you stood off them?
As you stood on them, you pressed the firing pin into the deck, which exploded it.
So it went off straight away?
Oh, aye.
What about booby traps?
Well, there was all kinds of booby traps. Pens, cups, bodies were booby trapped. And unless you were looking, you were easy caught out with them. You know, people would see a body and go and move it, never thinking about booby traps. You didn't expect them to booby trap dead bodies, but they did. Door knobs, you used to open the door and bang. And there was all sorts of booby traps. And you had to be very careful.
How did you keep your concentration up?
Well, this is something that I suppose survival kept your concentration up. You wanted to live. And if you didn't keep your concentration, you were a dead man. And so you had to keep it up.